Jesus said as he prepared to leave his disciples, he said, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give to you. Let not your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid." We gather this morning to remember, to celebrate, and to honor J. Allen Rent, and to take comfort in the gospel of Jesus Christ and in the fellowship of the communion of saints. My name is Chris Holroyd. I'm senior pastor of Westminster Presbyterian Church here in Muncie. And as we begin this morning, we want to give a special thank you to the Muncie Symphony Orchestra, and also a special thank you to High Street United Methodist Church for hosting us last night and again this morning. Al and his family grew up in this church, and Al and his twin brother Andy sang in the choir here. So it is a special privilege and particularly meaningful to celebrate Al in this place. So now, will you join me in reading together our call to worship, printed in your bulletin. Let us worship God, because Jesus Christ is risen from the dead. Whoever is in Christ is a new creation. Our help is in the name of the Lord. This morning we gather to give thanks to God for the life of Al Rent. Let's do so by standing, if you are able, and singing together praise to the indescribable God of heaven and earth. Let's sing together.
Of heights to the depths of the sea, creation's revealing your majesty. From the colors of fall to the fragrance of spring, every creature unique in the song that it sings, all exclaiming,
pray together. Eternal God, our Heavenly Father, you who love us with an everlasting love, you who alone can turn the shadow of death into the morning. Father, help us now to wait on you, to wait on you with reverent and believing hearts. Oh God, in this hour, would you speak to us of eternal things so that through patience and through the comfort of the scriptures, we may have hope. We might be lifted above our darkness and distress into your light, into your peace, into your presence. All this we ask through Jesus Christ, in whose name we pray. Amen. Please be seated.
Good morning. Well, thank you for coming, and my family thanks you, and I thank you for taking time out of your Saturday to be here. We really appreciate it. We've felt a lot of love these past few days, and it's been amazing. Today, you're going to hear from three of us briefly, a son, a friend and colleague, and a brother. And I hope you enjoy it, and we're honored to be here. Where to begin? Writing these are tough. It's just, there's so much I could say. And there's been such an outpouring on social media, the Facebook and the Muncie Star Press. I mean, it's been utterly overwhelming, but in a good way, in a very good way. And we appreciate so much everything you guys have written, and we would sit there in the family room and, pick out another one and, hey, did you see this latest one? Oh my gosh, this thing, it's just one after the other, and it's been fantastic. So some of the things that we've read in those posts, some of the adjectives about Dad, I've written down: leader, kind, encouraging, Mr. Muncie, teacher, mentor, nicest guy I ever met, a ray of sunshine, and neat hair. I think we have a picture of that neat hair down here somewhere, up front. Ephesians 4:2 says, be completely humble and gentle. Be patient. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. So the word that I'd like to focus on today that means a lot to me and as a son, and as he was, my father, was his patience with me. I needed a lot of it growing up. Jim knows. I did, in all stages of life. When I was a young kid, running around with my Superman cape and my Batman cape and pretending I was Luke Skywalker or Indiana Jones or what, and breaking whatever I could get my hands on, he was very patient. Rarely ever lost his temper. You guys would probably not be surprised to hear that, but it's true. Even at home, he rarely ever lost his temper, and he was very patient. Then some years later, as a teenager, I was the worst. Ungrateful, entitled, maybe the very first millennial to exist on Earth. Millennials may have patterned themselves after me. But again, even as a teenager, he was so patient. I mean, he rarely lost his patience with me as a teen. And, I don't have that skill. I lose my patience probably too often with my girls. Then some years later came college. And now, I know that lots of people go to school for 6 years. Most of them are doctors. I don't hold an MD. But he was very, very patient. 6 years worth of patience. getting my degree. I remember a time, I was coming up on what would have been, I guess, my last year, and I was struggling. I was thinking again, I just kind of still don't know exactly what I want to do. And I was close to getting a degree. And so I almost thought about taking a year off in this final stretch. So he came over to my, to my college house one day and sat down with me and says, "Hey, all right," with a big smile on his face, "hey, no problems here. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to give you a choice. I'm going to help you figure this out. And we're going to go choice A and choice B. Choice A is, if you need to take a year off, you need to clear your head and figure some things out. Hey, that's great. We'll support that decision. Just know that if you do that, then you're going to need to get a full-time job. You're going to need to then start paying for your rent at your home and your car and your utilities and your food and spending money and all those things." And I kind of, with wide eyes, just was going, "Oh, okay, all right." And he goes, "Or choice B is you could just stay in school this year, finish out, get your degree, and we'll pay for everything." So you may have guessed that my major was not rocket science, but it didn't take me long to figure that one out. And I said, "Yeah, I'll take B, I think. I think I'm going to take B, and I'm going to finish out and get a degree." And I did. Some years after that, we were talking, and I said, "Dad, going through that stretch right there, did you ever worry, about me, at this kind of juncture, did you ever wake up with cold sweats going, 'Oh my God, my son's a loser?'" And he said, "No, never. I knew you had all the skills. I knew you'd figure it out. Not once." I imagine there's a lot of people here that have had similar conversations. Over and over yesterday at the calling hours, I would hear people talk about how much he encouraged them and believed in them maybe when they didn't believe in themselves. And that was certainly me at that time. He was quite an encouraging guy to us at home. As his children, as he was to you guys in the community. And I'm going to miss him a lot. Thank you.
Mr. Muncie, Mr. Ball State, Mr. Sunshine, how about this weather? Is this him or what? So it would appear that I'm the only non-family member up here, but that's not how Al made me feel. He made us all feel like family. So this is just one big Al Rent family gathering. Linda, you look amazing for having given birth to thousands of kids. At first, I was honored to be asked to say a few words on behalf of the community for Al, but then it hit me. No one in their right mind accepts the responsibility of speaking on behalf of the community at Mr. Muncie's celebration, right? You've seen the outpouring of support on social media. So many people recounting incredible stories, and you've seen incredible coverage in the Star Press. There's no way to encapsulate all that on behalf of so many in so few words at a funeral. And then I realized perhaps they're asking me because I am not in my right mind. Let's hope these next few minutes are not a journey into that. But in all seriousness, I'm honored to be here, humbled to be here, honestly a little scared to be here. But Al and I were kindred spirits in many ways. Both of us were marketing and advertising guys at heart, a really old school version of Mad Men who don't mind a microphone every now and again. Yet the weight of the responsibility seems to have grown in the last 24 hours. So to lighten the load a bit, I'm going to start with an advertising story. I use the word story instead of joke because if you decide not to laugh, we'll just call it a story. But as it turned out, advertising man J. Allen Rent and a Methodist minister from Omaha passed away at exactly the same time. And they were on the same elevator to heaven. Al Rent was rather composed, buttoned up with his button down, as he always was. Natalie dressed, charming smile on his face, and prepared. But the Methodist minister was not able to contain his excitement. As the elevator started to go up, Al, with all of his best WIPB, WBST, public broadcasting, telesale experience, asked, "What do you think heaven's going to be like?" "Oh, I'm a classic Old Testament guy," shouts the minister. "I'd like to think there are going to be white, billowy clouds, the purest light you've ever seen, winged angels playing the most beautiful music you've ever heard, and there'll be an ivory-covered, colored stagecoach led by 8-winged white horses that are going to sweep down and carry me off to a grand estate with all my family ancestors." And Al just smiled, his beautiful smile, takes it all in and waits quietly until the elevator doors open. And sure enough, that's what happened. White billowy clouds everywhere, angels were playing, and heavenly music. And out of nowhere, a majestic white stagecoach swooped in. "Oh, wow," exclaims the minister, "this is just how I envisioned it. It's beautiful." Just then, the door opened and St. Peter got out and he motioned to Al. And Al kind of sheepishly walks forward and gets into the stagecoach, which was completely decked out in Ball State red and black leather interior, playing Cabaret, Al's favorite show tune. And St. Peter closes the door and the music resumes, and it flies away into the beautiful light, headed toward a grand estate on the hill, which just happens to be a perfect replica of Minnetrista Cultural Center. Then the music stops, and St. Peter starts walking away, and the Methodist minister gets out, and he's getting upset. "Wait, where's my music? Where's my angels? Where's my stagecoach?" And St. Peter says, "Oh, were you talking about that? Well, that's the first advertising guy we've ever had up here. We get your kind up here all the time." There is no doubt where J. Allen Rent resides. I often say to my kids, anything worth doing is worth doing well. And Al gave to his local community so well. But in my mind, there are three myths about Al's passing that I want to share. Myth number one at Al Rent's celebration: we lost a great one. Actually, we haven't lost him at all. I know exactly where Al is. If you stop and think for a moment about the glory Al is receiving right now and think about the smile and laughter and joy he's experiencing, considering it a loss becomes selfish. He is exactly where he should be. He's probably talking to the big guy right now about throwing a little love toward the United Way of Delaware County campaign in 2017. And more importantly, Al is within each of us. We haven't lost him at all. Through his gifts and his time and talent, he has multiplied within each of us. Oh no, not lost. We have been blessed to have a great one as long and as strong as we did. Myth number two: cancer stinks. Okay, this one may be a bit controversial, but bear with me, please. While I can't imagine some of the pain and suffering inflicted by this disease that we must conquer, I prefer to take a bigger picture look at Al's battle. As kind and as giving and as loving as Al was, his diagnosis years ago changed even his behavior. The reality of facing your own mortality with a bit more urgency led him to more kindness, more giving, more loving, if that's possible. We even talked a couple times about the trips he decided to take with Linda that previously he might not have allowed himself to take, because that time with his wife and his family would be more important than any gift of time to his community. Moreover, we got a chance to honor Al in a way that he would have never previously allowed. The night of the Chamber Legacy Award was one for the ages. It was sweet, it was moving, it was educational, it was inspirational. It was one giant yet humble how to live life in a local community. I was not the only one taking notes. Myth number three: our hearts are broken. Nope, not mine. Mine's full because Al helped fill it. He invested in me like he did so many others, and he made me feel special. But he made everyone feel special, as you can see from so many of the posts and quotes. And I'm reminded that the amount of time that Linda and his kids, or even us, will be without him is but a blip on the screen of eternity, because we're all going to have the opportunity to join him. Heartbroken? Nope. My heart is full, knowing that Al has heard the words, "Well done, faithful servant." The best way I can describe how I felt about Al was that he was my Muncie dad. And from all the posts, I know I was but one of hundreds, if not thousands, of his kids. Al was busy. And the arc of our relationship mirrored that of many fathers and sons. Chris and I have chuckled about our trading places 25 years ago. He grew up in Muncie, hanging out with Al, now lives on the north side of Indy. I grew up in the north side of Indy and have been hanging out with Al for the last 25 years. And Al became my Muncie dad. I respected him. I sought his approval. I argued with him, and I came to love him. So as an advertising guy, your job is to figure out what differentiates a product or service. So what differentiated Al? What made him a community legend? Well, first, he was enthusiastic. Will Davis, a friend and fellow lover of words, once broke down the word enthusiasm for me and its roots. En theos, literally meaning God within. What a perfect description of Al. He was always positive because he had God within him. Second, he worked hard. If we totaled all the hours Al spent working on community projects, he must have been 132 years old. He was 73. He leveraged his talents and time to make magic happen, and he made it look so easy. And lastly, he was consistent. He was always encouraging, always uplifting, always smiling. The consistency of the stories shared this week are remarkable and inspiring. Enthusiastic, hardworking, consistent. The recipe for a community legend and a great dad. Now, you've all heard the saying, the grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. Well, for Al Rent, he has always known that the grass is greener where you water it. And that's exactly what he has been doing all along, watering and nurturing and trimming and pruning and cutting and manicuring this grass. Heck, rumor has it that Al actually cut his grass in khakis, a button down, and a blue blazer. Is that true? That's what we all picture. So as I look out on all those beautiful faces out there, not only do I see green grass, even on this day in January, but I see trees, I see oaks, I see sequoias, I see growing trees that Al Rent has planted and watered and nurtured, or all the above. Trees that are growing proudly, reaching for the sky, proud to be in Muncie soil, watered by his values of service above self, unrelenting hard work, enthusiasm, and an unflappable positive attitude, all qualities that make a great dad. Al Rent saw the beautiful forest because he loved all the individual trees. Now, Al would not want all this heavy attention, so I'm going to finish with a poem of what happened last night after the calling hours. 'Twas the night before the celebration. 'Twas the night before Al's celebration, and all through the town, Al had ordered all the frowns turned upside down. Facebook posts were crafted by the hundreds with care, and photos of J. Allen Rent seemed to be everywhere. His children were so proud as they got into bed, knowing this was about their dad, so much being said. And Linda, with her hair coiffed just right, settled her brain on the pillow for all too short a night. When out on Ball State's campus there arose such a clatter, it was more than the bid races that caused all the chatter. Away to the window, Linda flew like a flash, gently opened the shutters and saw a big bash. The people of the town had gathered below. It was January, yet Al made sure there wasn't any snow. When what to her wondering eyes should appear but Letterman in a sleigh and thousands of cheers. With hundreds of telesailors so talented and quick, they'd been trained by Al. They could handle the shtick. More numbered than ball jars produced in this city, the people refused to let this town be called shoddy. I never heard Al curse. Not once. Now, Tyler and Milius and Terry Witt Bailey, all positive attitudes, and let's have Muncie on the moves daily. On Kinsey and Brewer, oh, Al was leading us all. Now, dash away, negative Nellies, he called. And all of us gathered to say our goodbyes, but we all knew where Al was. He was inside. But then Jim Davis appeared with his groovy fat cat with a microphone in hand and ready to chat. He wanted to tell stories of the life of Al Rent, the things that he'd done and the time that he'd spent, founding things like Huffer and Muncie on the Move, and going to Minnetrista, which Al thinks was better than the Louvre. The stories how they flew and turned people around, some favorites emerged of all that abound, and one involved Delaware and the beloved country club. A situation arose that caused some hubbub. A teenage Kelly Stanley was putting his feet on the tables, and a young Al Rent told him to remove them, or so goes the fable. Al always dressed crisply from his head to his feet, and his clothes were all pressed with starch so neat. A bundle of joys he always had on his back, and he loved to peddle them on your back, give a pat. His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. Some lines you just don't change. A gentleman always was how he was known, and the hair on his head had become as white as the snow. The stump of a cigar at times he held tight in his mouth, and the projects he worked on, not a single went south. He drove around town so proud of his Lexus. Meeting to meeting he went, dreaming of what was next for us. And he was no longer plump, but still a right jolly old elf, and you laughed when you were with him, you just couldn't help yourself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his pen always remind us that he thought that Muncie was a 10. His words always flowery, so precise all his work. He built all of us up and was never, ever a jerk. All the world was his stage, he surely did live it. His life brought joy, like his plays at Muncie Civic. But now the big director has made the call. It's time for Al to leave the land of ball. But I heard Al proclaim, as he rose out of sight, happy Muncie to all, and to all make it right.
Good morning. This is not exactly how I pictured my return to Muncie and High Street United Methodist Church, but it's so heartwarming to see so many people, and having heard from so many people yesterday, and I've been away for a long time, back and forth from Michigan to here, and just to get a chance to meet old friends and make new friends was so heartwarming. Life with Al, growing up as twins, was really unique, because when you're identical twins, unfortunately you think alike. We were the holy terrors of Godman Avenue. When my parents had little, they didn't know they were having twins until the nurse came out and said, "Mr. Rent, you have a handsome little boy." He said, "Great." 5 minutes later, she came out, "Mr. Rent, you have another handsome little boy." And when they picked him up off the floor and revived him, they had to come up with names. They only had one name. So suddenly, I became David Andrew, and he was James Allen. But they thought Dave and Jim, that wasn't cute for little twin boys, so we were always Al and Andy, and I was always the other one. When you're so connected, you are literally each other's best friend, and it's, pardon me, it's an understanding that you have that you don't either recognize or no one else can understand, that you are just connected. And I could talk to Al over the years, whether we're here in town or whether I was calling from Michigan, and we could literally pick up a conversation from a month ago. And we'd always call each other to tell each other the latest new joke. We'd always have, I got a new joke for you. I got a new joke for you. And in the past couple of weeks, I had some new jokes. And I called Al, and I wanted to tell him a new joke, just like we always did. The last joke I told him was a golf joke. Some of the jokes I can't repeat here today, but the last joke was a golf joke. And he laughed, and we laughed. Because as we'd start telling each other jokes, we'd become hysterical. We were thinking alike, and we knew where the other one was going. And sometimes we hadn't even gotten to the punchline yet. Then you get to the punchline, and then you're crying. So a golfer is, I'll tell you the last joke I told Al. It's a very simple joke. Golfer and his caddy are playing. The golfer is a terrible golfer. He's hitting every shot badly. He pulls out a 5-iron from his bag and says to his caddy, "Do you think I can get there with a 5-iron? The caddy says, "Eventually." When we were kids, we shared a bedroom together. We'd play together. We always wanted to be in broadcasting. We always gravitated to theater and doing plays. And we had our sister Judy, who was much, much younger than we are. Just ask her. And Judy, here you have the two boys, and then Judy came along, and she was a little princess of the family. Well, we decided we would play with Judy too. She could be included in our things. And so we'd love to play cowboys and Indians. Rumor has it that we put a rope around her neck and threw it over a tree and then went home to dinner. And I do remember my mother saying, "Where's your sister?" "She's in the Hosey's yard." "What's she doing there?" "Well, she's standing on a bench." "Why?" "Well, there's a rope around her neck." At some other time, we may have set her hair on fire. I'm not sure. It was an accident. We were always doing plays and theaters and theater. And in our basement, we'd string up on the laundry lines that my mom had in the basement, we'd string up sheets and we'd create a theater. And we'd always do murder mysteries. And Judy, out of the kindness of her heart, was always the dead body. I think it's absolutely stunning and remarkable that she's grown up to be the wonderful woman that she is today. Therapy does wonders for her. Al and I went on to do theater and shows, Little Shoestring Theater, Civic Theater, Ball State. I moved away to follow my broadcasting dream, and Al stayed here and just kept building almost an empire in a way. It's really interesting to see all the people that he touched and hear from so many of them and how heartwarming it is to see what an impact he had on everyone's life. But it was normal for him. He got more back from doing than I'm sure you got from him doing, because it meant so much to him. And your outpouring and your love and your kind words and all the things that people have said have meant so much. I wanted to share with you one note. My son Jeff, I have a lot of children. I tried to populate the world. We have, Al had two. So I thought, well, not enough. I'll have 7. And we have 13 grandchildren, and I love every one of them. And I have 6 daughters and 1 son. And actually, he loves it that way because he's just doted on entirely. But Jeff, who was in broadcasting and then is in public relations now, wrote just a wonderful, thoughtful piece that I'd like to close with today. Because he wrote it on Facebook and talked about how my heart is broken because my Uncle Al has passed away. He was a good man. He was not a great man, but I do not say this disrespectfully, he said, because to be great often comes at the expense of others, and this was not Al. He simply made everyone around him better. He was generous with his time, dedicated to making his community a better place for everyone. Al gave me my start, he said, in broadcasting and for so many others. He was the perfect role model for all aspiring broadcasters. He was the consummate professional. He was humble, unflappable on the air, engaging, witty, and very funny, but never at the expense of others. Al Rent was a good man. Al loved his Ball State Cardinals almost as much as he loved his family. He was the eternal optimist, always saying the Cardinal football and basketball teams were going to be better next year. He was unshakable, even after pretty dismal seasons. He always believed the Cards were on the verge of success. He was a good man. He was a good husband, a good father, a good brother, a good grandfather, a good uncle. He only wanted good things for all of us. I'm sure Jeff says that Al's already helping St. Peter announce the new arrivals in heaven. Al was a good man, and he had a great life.